Since its creation in 2004, the Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, or 3CDC, has played a direct role in some of the biggest developments in downtown Cincinnati and over the Rhine. 3CDC has gotten international accolades for its work, but has also faced criticism that it fueled the gentrification of over the Rhine and helped drive up rents. This is Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about what 3CDC has done and what the future holds is 3CDC President and CEO Steve Leeper. Welcome back, Steve.
Thanks, Lucy. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. 3CDC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. So we're going to go back to the beginning, all the way back to 2004. What was your understanding of how the 3CDC model was developed and what the precedent for it was?
Well, in many ways, I don't think there was a precedent, and I don't think we knew what we wanted to be when we grew up at the time. The corporate community here had, prior to my arrival, had a third party come in and assess the situation, and they were really focused on three areas: over the Rhine and the deterioration of that neighborhood, the sort of blatant disinvestment that was going on in downtown, and reinvesting in downtown. And then lastly, at that time, they thought we should undertake the Banks project, but that changed direction a couple years later.
Yeah. And when you try to explain just briefly to people what 3CDC is and where the money comes from to pay for all the stuff you all do, both the public and private funding, how do you explain that to people? It's a complicated thing.
Yeah, well, it's in some ways it is, and in some ways it isn't. We are a nonprofit real estate development company that focuses on investing in both downtown and over the Rhine. That's the targeted area that we work in. We don't really work beyond that point. We do work that sometimes a private developer does, kinds of things that private developer would do, such as office buildings and restaurant development and apartments. But we also do things that a for-profit developer wouldn't do, like taking over civic spaces, deteriorated civic spaces, renovating them, operating them. We built three comprehensive residential and service facilities for the homeless, spent over $42 million doing that. We renovated Music Hall on behalf of the city, Memorial Hall, and now we're carrying out the redevelopment of the Convention Center.
And that's a lot of money. I mean, that adds up to hundreds of billions, more than $1 billion that you all, more than $2 billion. Yeah. I just got the finger signal there.
Not the two finger
the two finger, right, not the other one, that you all have invested. Where does that money come from?
It comes from a variety of sources. There is obviously city support and state support, so there's some public money that goes into this effort, but the vast majority of it is privately raised. Through both conventional debt and equity. And a lot of the equity comes in through historic tax credits or a program that's called New Market Tax Credits. So that there's philanthropy. Our community is very generous, and they put over well over $10 million into the effort to build the homeless facilities and then also put money into Music Hall and the civic spaces. So the philanthropy plays some role. But the majority of money is privately raised.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know 3CDC's work has changed over time. Early on, your work in Over the Rhine involved converting vacant buildings to homeownership. You all helped relocate several nonprofits that serve people experiencing homelessness, which you just mentioned, the Homeless to Homes plan. And then they went to new facilities outside the neighborhood. Talk about why those steps were important in your view.
Well, first of all, when we started in Over the Rhine, I don't think people quite recall just how distressed that neighborhood was, and there were very limited people living there. Homeownership rate was below 4%. There were a series of defaulted, publicly subsidized affordable housing communities that went in default, and then people left them. Affordable housing communities that were in place and still are in place because they had restrictive covenants. So some of those properties have subsequently been renovated, but they were not people pushed out. And many of these defaulted communities we actually purchased and kept the housing assistance payment contracts, which actually provide the affordability to the individuals, and maintained those into the neighborhood. And then subsequently, we've working either on our own or with partners, have developed about 450 affordable housing units in the neighborhood. So we've done that with a combination of doing condominium development. We've done over 500 units of condominiums, and they mix in right with the affordable housing community. And then, of course, we contributed the whole effort to bring street level development, that commercial development that's really fueled by local entrepreneurs.
Yeah, shops, restaurants, bars, all those kinds of things. And I wanted to mention that in more recent years, you all have been developing apartments in Over the Rhine, including more affordable units. How affordable are the units that you all have been developing, and how big a part of your work does that represent these days?
It represents a big part of our work. It's been a wide range, and affordable, I think people use that term affordable housing different ways. So some of the units are very low income, that they might go as low as 30% of the median income, that have Section 8 assistance associated with them. We have ones that are 50 to 60%, so that what you would call the low income tax credit rates. They don't necessarily have housing assistance payments to the individuals, but there is capital put into those buildings, and therefore restrictive rents are part of that funding source. And then we've done some things that are as high as 80% of the median, which a lot of people would refer to as workforce housing. And so we've done a whole broad range of them. And some of them have services, some of them don't have services, depending on the needs of the individuals and the developers that we've partnered with.
We're talking about 3CDC with 3CDC CEO Steve Leeper, and we're talking about what the group's accomplished over the past 20 years, what he's learned in that time, and what's ahead. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We have gotten some emails already. We heard from Steve in Oakley. Steve writes, 3CDC is classified as a 501c3 tax-exempt private nonprofit from their website. However, parallel images and sense of mission similar to the Little Sisters of the Poor do not pop into my head when I think of this developer. With revenues exceeding $38 million and holdings valued at approaching $500 million, as reported in 2018 in the media, all activities are concentrated in the core of the city. The average citizen of the city in the rest of the city has to speculate just how nonprofit this privately held entity is. Couple this with a consistent pattern from elected leadership in the city selling taxpayer assets to 3CDC for a dollar, granting generous tax abatements. One has to wonder, at what point is all this fiduciary generosity a benefit to the city as a whole? Sometimes I wonder, does Mr. Leeper or a member of his staff have a permanent office in City Hall? So strong perspective there from Steve and Oakley. What are your thoughts on that, Steve?
Thanks, Steve, for the email. First of all, we are very proud of our relationship with the city. What we carry out and do is always consistent with their approach. Really do the work that we do at their directive. We may propose things, but make sure that it is consistent with their mission and plans. And so part of our reason we've been had some success is because we've kept that relationship very strong with various mayors, members of council, city managers, police chiefs. So we're proud of that relationship. So thanks for acknowledging that we have a good relationship, Steve. We are not for profit, and but that doesn't mean we don't pay taxes. So we pay property taxes, and we pay a lot of property taxes, well in excess of $1 million a year, much more than that, actually. We all obviously pay sales tax. The businesses that we have supported and contribute handsomely to the sales tax of both Hamilton County and the state of Ohio, because we're now producing, you know, $30-40 million, $50 million a year in sales that are now being taxed, and that investment was being made primarily with private money. So I would just ask that if you go to other cities and see deteriorated neighborhoods and the effort that the corporate community put into this to make sure that that neighborhood changed, and changed in an equitable way, in our opinion, that we think has all overall been very positive for the city. And I think if you look at Cincinnati today, and this is what I would ask everybody to do versus 2004, if you can all remember back that far, it's a different place in a positive way. And I think it's only going to get even better as we push forward. And even though we've got tripped a little bit during the pandemic, like everybody did, I think we've come out of it roaring. And one last thing, the idea that we now getting a building from a dollar, I think Steve is referring to the Saks Fifth Avenue building, which was vacant. And there are cities around this country that are plagued with buildings like this that they are not, don't know what to do with. This is a partnership with the city. So they paid us a dollar. They have an interest in the property. They get an interest if the property is sold. They get interest if the property produces. We pay taxes on it. And by the way, we've got a new tenant there, both an office tenant and a restaurant tenant. And just like the Macy's building that we spent over almost $70 million on, if it wasn't, I think, for the ability of a non-for-profit that doesn't require a 20% return on its cash, those projects would not have been done.
We also got an email from Michael. Michael emails, "I'm confused about why the CEO of a nonprofit should be paid more than $550,000 a year." Didn't check that salary number, so I don't know if that's right, Steve. "And the next seven people on the organization's list make a total of more than $1.4 million. What's not for profit about that? My overall feeling about 3CDC is that 3CDC has been a tool not for healing the city, but for gentrifying it. Good for business, maybe, and maybe good for the upper and upper middle classes, while definitely, and as if by choice, not making it a more livable city for all its residents, especially all those who lived in the center of the city when 3CDC began its work." And I think that gets back to that gentrifying figure. And I didn't mean to say that we didn't check the number. My producer, our producer, did look, and ProPublica listed that as your salary too. So I just was saying I had not done that research before the show, but she did. So
yeah, well, sometimes they look at what your total compensation is, and that's, you know, like everybody's compensation. Anyway, you can look it up, and it's fine. We put our information in the public eye, and that's fine. The people that work there, I believe, if you compare them to other folks that do that similar kind of work, my colleagues work very hard for their salary. So I will defend that to anyone in a very positive discussion. With regard to gentrifying the neighborhood, as I mentioned to you before, this is not a neighborhood that had long-term home ownership. It was not a neighborhood where buildings were bought and people were pushed out. We probably bought two buildings in total that were actually occupied. We did buy the building that now houses 21C, and that was a very distressed property that we did relocate tenants, and it took us 2 years to do so.
Mm-hmm. That was a hotel at the time, short-term rental hotel,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. It was a poorly run Section 8 property that was under a consent decree.
Okay.
From the prosecutor's office. In terms of what positive contributions, I would look to each of the civic spaces that we have built. Rebuilt the heart of the city with Fountain Square, took a very deteriorated and crime-ridden park and expanded it in Washington Park, which I would argue is the most democratic space in the city. You go there on any given night, and there's people from all walks of life there enjoying that park together. We rebuilt a very crime-ridden and a public space that children did not attend, and that's Sigler Park. Instead of closing the pool, we built a bigger pool. And instead of closing the basketball courts, we redid the basketball courts. We expanded the park. We have over 500 kids taking swim lessons every year at our expense. We have an 80-child summer camp every year that we fund as well. We have swim teams there. It is something that we work very hard at with the community. We provide passes, free passes to folks in the affordable housing communities to be there. So the narrative that this is we're this big corporate group that doesn't care about the folks that we serve is, I think, to be honest with you, a little bit of a tired narrative. Sure, certainly have we done some things that we could have done differently? Absolutely. Are we not above criticism? Absolutely not. We're working in the public spaces. We should be challenged, but I just hope that people don't use sort of that sort of tired narrative. You assume that because a neighborhood has been redeveloped and is now vibrant from a period of time where we had 1,800 part one and two crimes in a 60-block area in 2004, you assume that because it looks like it today, that somebody must have been hurt in the process, and that nobody has of lower income that has benefited from it. And that's just not a true version of what the story has been.
Okay. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear how you can speak directly to a local survivor of the Holocaust. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about 3CDC, what the organization has done over the past 20 years, and what's ahead for the future. My guest is 3CDC President and CEO Steve Leeper. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk at wvxu.org. We do have a caller on the line. Hi, David. Thanks for calling. What is your question or comment?
My comment is, yes, there are building nice things and they are making like huge progress and changing how the neighborhoods look, but it's not helping the people who've been living there their whole life. The people who they building the buildings for and all these houses, they get to experience it, but the people who've been living there their whole life never get to experience nothing nice. So I don't know if it's helping.
Okay. What do you think about that, Steve?
The people that do, we are building apartments in over the Rhine, and they are both for affordable and have restrictions on rents that are required by both the state government and the federal government. And they are accessible to people in the neighborhood. In fact, that's who's living there now. And I think there's been some real benefit there, and we've done some apartments both south of Liberty, and then now we've moved north of Liberty, where we've done a series of apartment developments, and we're about to do some additional ones by Findlay Market, all of which will have rent restrictions and affordability requirements.
Thank you, David. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for that call. Steve, during the break, you were mentioning another way that you've worked with the neighborhood or worked with people in the neighborhood is through your employment policies. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, you know, we probably employ 80 to 90 full-time people that work both in the business districts in downtown and in over the Rhine, supported by the Business Improvement District. So you see folks that are out there cleaning the streets, keeping them safe, keeping them clean, addressing customer service needs. And then we also have people that work in our civic spaces, so the parks every day. So these are all direct employees of ours, and they are then also direct employees that work for us in our parking facilities. And we have taken a very strong practice of ensuring that we employ people who need a second chance or third chance in life. So probably about 50% of our employees in that work in the field are former felons. Or in some cases, in addition to that, there are people who are in recovery. So we focus on both of them. Our 40 full-time employees that work in the business districts and in the civic spaces, we've had like a 15% turnover in 2 years. We pay, you know, if you're just starting as an ambassador, you know, you're making at least north of $18 an hour. We pay 100% of the health benefits. We provide a bunch of other services to try to get them into a financially better position in their lives. If you're a supervisor and manager, you're making north of $35 an hour, and with, again, that health benefits 100% being paid. So we take this very seriously. Our turnover rate is low. Many of these folks live in the neighborhood. We are now, because they're oftentimes former felons, they have difficulty getting housing in federally subsidized housing facilities, which is the most bizarre concept if you really think about it.
Right.
So some of our projects are not subject to that requirement. So we are, our goal was to really, in this calendar year, to push forward having our team begin to be housed in some of the developments that we have funded. And it has obviously a benefit to them, but it has a benefit to us as well. And by the way, these folks have contributed significantly to this city. If the 40 full-time, the way they treat the public.
Oh, yeah. I see them all the time when I'm out walking. It really is an impressive group.
And, you know, if they see somebody that's in distress, either because of addiction or having a violent episode, they handle themselves with unbelievable dignity. They treat people with dignity. And what we could never pay them what they give back to us. I'm just telling you, this has been, we merged in 2019 with our friends at DCI.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Sam, I'm going to interrupt you there because we're running out of time and there are a few more questions I want to get to. We've talked about so many of the big projects that you've been involved in. One big project that everybody's thinking about is this new arena. I'm wondering, where do you think it should go, and will 3CDC be involved in that at all?
You know, I was part of the committee that looked at the different locations. I think from my point of view, and this is just my point of view personally, not I wouldn't even say it's 3CDC's point of view, that the two locations downtown really make a lot of sense, either in this particular location, which we're sitting as we sit, although it has some challenges, you know, it has some good and bad like the other site does.
That's the site where CET is located, where we're currently located.
And then the other site is down there near the convention center on land that will be freed up as a result of the Brent Spence Bridge reconstruction. So I think they're both could be very positively to the neighborhood. I mean, what TQL Stadium has done for this neighborhood is incredible. It's brought a lot of vibrancy, particularly after we had so many down years in 20 and 21. Whether or not we're involved long term, I don't know that. I mean, to the extent that we can be helpful to the city and the county, like we are with the convention center, we're happy to. But we would, if that only do so if they asked us to.
Yeah. Well, and as I said, we're running out of time. You've done so much over the past 20 years. I guess I'm wondering what you're most proud of, and if you have any regrets over that time.
I think the regrets are that, you know, we had a couple, you know, we had some phone calls today, and that people still feel that we've done more negative than positive. I wish that, well, maybe we should have done some things to make them feel better about what we've done, or maybe we could have done some things differently so they wouldn't feel the way that they do. So I always think that that's been a little bit of a challenge, that we maybe not have articulated what we do and how we do it. But I think the most important project that we did, and I mentioned it earlier, was Washington Park. I think it just changed things dramatically. The one caller said to the people from the neighborhood benefit, you go there on a summer night and you tell me if there's people from the neighborhood and children from that neighborhood who are playing in that park, enjoying that park in a fashion that they could never have done back in 2010.
We did get an email from Ben. Ben writes, I live downtown and have enjoyed several of the developments that have been made possible by 3CDC. My favorite is what's happened at Court Street. Court Street Kitchen is amazing. He asks, what else is planned for Court Street? More restaurants or more events? But we're running out of time, Ben, so you'll just have to stay tuned, see what's next for 3CDC.
Thanks, Ben.
I've been talking with 3CDC President and CEO Steve Leeper. Thanks so much for your time today, Steve. We had so much more to get to. I'm sorry we ran out of time.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
You're so kind. Appreciate
it. Up next, we'll hear how you can speak directly to local survivors of the Holocaust. This is Cincinnati Edition.